Tonight's scripture reading comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 1, verses 5 through 25. In the days of King Herod of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly order of Abijah. His wife was a descendant of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Both of them were righteous before the Lord, living blamelessly according to all the commandments and regulations of the Lord. But they had no children, because Elizabeth was barren, and both were getting on in years. Once when he was serving as priest before God, and his section was on duty, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to enter the sanctuary of the Lord and offer incense. Now, at the time of the incense offering, the whole assembly of the people was praying outside. Then there appeared to him an angel of the Lord standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was terrified, and fear overwhelmed him. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah, for your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you will name him John. You will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for he will be great in the sight of God, of the Lord. He must never drink wine or strong drink. Even before his birth, he will be filled with the Holy Spirit. He will turn many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God. With the spirit and power of Elijah, he will go before him to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Zechariah said to the angel, "How will I know that this is so? For I am an old man, and my wife is getting on in years." The angel replied, "I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you to bring you this good news. But now, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time, you will become mute, unable to speak until the day these things occur." Meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah and wondered at his delay in the sanctuary. When he did come out, he could not speak to them. And they realized that he had seen a vision in the sanctuary. He kept motioning to them and remained unable to speak. When his time of service was ended, he went to his home. After those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and for 5 months she remained in seclusion. She said, "This is what the Lord has done for me when he looked favorably on me and took away the disgrace I have endured among my people." The word of the Lord.
I like when a story begins sideways, or when it backs in almost all the way to the middle. "What?" I asked. Angie wasn't much older than me, but she kind of took care of me after school. And 3 years seems like a lot more than 3 years when the distance is between 13 and 16. It wasn't an official arrangement. I don't even know if my parents knew that she did it. They worked a lot and were in a lot of groups. It was the late 70s, and everyone seemed like they were in groups. Encounter groups and asked women's consciousness groups and consciousness-raising groups, meditation groups, organizing for the ERA, the United Farm Workers, and peace and racial justice groups. And I don't know what adults everywhere were trying, I don't know why, but adults everywhere were trying to find themselves or figure out what they were supposed to be doing with their lives. And I don't know if it was a generational thing, like being raised in the 50s, they had no say in who they were supposed to be or how they were supposed to live. And after they had been doing what they were supposed to do for a while, it finally occurred to them that their square dad or Eisenhower was no longer looking over their shoulders and they could just do whatever they wanted or be whoever they wanted to be. If they only knew who they wanted to be and what they wanted to do. So they joined groups to try and figure it out. Or maybe the adults were going to all these groups because the world had just changed radically, changed under their feet and around them, and they sort of were required to change themselves. So they needed to get together with other adults to figure it out, learn new ways of being, know people they'd never known before. Sometimes the world changes so radically that it's harder to pretend everything is the same than to admit that you're caught up in the current and can't quite get your footing. So after work, my mom and dad would go to their groups, and we would have dinner later, or my mom would leave a note with instructions on how to heat up the TV dinner or SpaghettiOs, and they wouldn't be home till late. So I would walk home from school the long way just for something to do. I would walk down the alleys and look in people's trash, or I'd see how many blocks I could kick the same rock. One time I was in the alley behind our house kicking the rock into the garage door over and over again because it made a loud, weird sound, a hollow thunk, and then a wing, 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 wing from the vibrations of the springs of the garage door opener. Angie lived in the house across the alley. She surprised me. "What are you doing?" I jumped. I was at a loss because she'd startled me and because what I was doing was so stupid. So I said, "I don't know. I just don't want to go in the house yet." "Why?" she asked. "I don't know," I answered honestly. "You know, I've lived across the alley from you guys since the beginning of the school year. And I've never really talked to your mom or dad or you, and I've never been in your house. My parents aren't always, they're not around, they're always like doing stuff. And it's just regular, my house is just regular," I told her. "You can come in if you want." So we went in the kitchen and we talked for a really long time. Just talked without thinking about it. She was really cool and interesting and different from like kids or adults. She saw the note on the kitchen counter and laughed. "I bet you could figure out how to heat up the TV dinners without the instructions." "Yeah, I've done it a lot, but my mom always writes down the instructions." "Do you want me to do it for you? I mean, I know that you know how to do it, but sometimes it's just nice for someone to do things for you," she said. "Okay." And she did. And she started coming over every day when I got home from school. We would talk for hours. Sometimes she would ask me questions I hadn't thought about, or just how school was. Sometimes I would ask her questions. She would make me dinner and help me with my homework and tell me stories. Stories from her life and folk tales and myths and Bible stories. She knew a lot about a lot of things. And it always almost seemed like she was trying to make a point with the stories, but I wasn't quite sure and didn't know if I got the point. But they seemed important. It seemed like it would be worthwhile or helpful somehow if I listened and thought about them. One time she told me the story from about when she was a kid, a little kid. "When I was 7, me and my mom lived with her boyfriend in this house for about a year. And the only other kids in the neighborhood were the Schlossbergs, Annie and Evan Schlossberg. They lived across the street, and they always went to Sunday school, and they went to church at night sometimes. I remember thinking, even at 7, that they went to church a lot. And they had to go in and stop playing when the streetlights came on. I remember their mom or dad coming out to get them. 'Evan, Annie, time to come in.' I always wanted to keep playing, but they had to go in. 'Bye, Angie. See you tomorrow.' We would play house for hours. There was this one time right before my mom broke up with that boyfriend and we moved. Yeah, the night before. We were playing house in my front yard. We played in my front yard because my mom's boyfriend had all this old wood and buckets and things in the yard, and we'd use them to make tables and beds and counters when we played house. There was also this big area with no grass in it, and we would run the hose on it and make mud for mud pies or mud pancakes or mud chili, depending on what time of day it was we were pretending. Well, that time we'd started out pretending that it was lunch, and we must have played for hours because we went through one whole pretend weekend. Even Evan was the dad. He was always the dad, of course, because he was the only boy. And he liked to be the dad because he could build stuff. He would say, "I'm going to remodel the kitchen, honey." And he would put boards on top of these big logs for a counter and use milk crates to make us a table. This time he went all out and found these huge, I guess they were refrigerator boxes. "I thought we needed new appliances, honey." Annie was the mom. She was never the mom before because she thought it wasn't right to be married to her brother. But I never really liked being married to her brother either, so I convinced her to let me be the little girl. Oh, I don't know what it was about that time, but we just forgot about time, real time. We were so into it. It was so real. I was helping Mom with the mud chili for Saturday lunch, and Dad was out mowing the pretend lawn. It was a perfect weekend. After dinner, I even went outside to pretend I was playing with the neighbors. Annie called out, "Teresa Genevieve." That was my pretend name. I don't want to have to tell you twice, Teresa Genevieve. It's time to come in for bed. So we got in our beds that Evan made by piling up leaves, but he had to make another one really quick because Annie said she wouldn't sleep in the same bed with her brother, and that it was okay because Mr. and Mrs. Howell didn't sleep in the same bed on Gilligan's Island. "Teresa Genevieve, get up and help me make some mud pancakes before we go to church. You don't want to be late for Sunday school." We made such a fine breakfast, Annie and me. We put little rocks in the mud for blueberry pancakes. It was so much fun. When Evan finished setting up the church, we sat down for Sunday breakfast. And as we sat down, the streetlights went on. "Annie, Evan, time to come in." They left. I was sitting there alone. An orphan with the most beautiful pretend breakfast, all by myself. I'd even gotten some oil from my mom's boyfriend's garage for syrup. It was the strangest feeling sitting there in the front yard in the dark with this breakfast on the table. When I looked up at the streetlights, I felt like Angie in my mom's boyfriend's front yard. But when I looked down, I was Teresa Genevieve in my own house. I picked up the can of oil and poured it onto the mud cake and took a spoonful and ate it. And then I started eating the mud cakes by the handful. I ate all of them. That night, my mom got in this huge fight with her boyfriend and loaded all our stuff in the car, and we left to drive to my grandma's house in Arizona. I was so sick. I threw up the whole way. I didn't say anything for a while after she finished the story. It just seemed like she was thinking about something more. And I thought that I should try and think about what it was. And then I was embarrassed by the silence. So I said, "That's gross." "Yeah," she said. "It was. And it smelled like throw up in the car for a really long time. We drove with the windows open. But then the silence came back, and it stuck for a while. "We're going to be all right," she said finally. "Yeah," I said. "Yeah." We both smiled barely a smile at each other, like we both knew what we were talking about. But I don't know if either of us did. And the silence came back, and I felt embarrassed again, like I should say something or put on a sweatshirt. "Hey, can I ask you something?" I said, not sure what I would ask her. "Yeah, anything. How come," I began fishing for the rest of the question, "how come you're always, like, around? I mean, I'm glad that you are, but, like, how come you're never, like, with kids from your school, or you don't even talk about school?" "I don't go to school," she said. "Why not? You're so smart. Did you graduate early?" "No, my mom took me out." "Yeah? Yeah. Why?" "'Cause I'm pregnant." "Yeah, I told my mom I was pregnant, and she just took me out of school." "Are you okay? Like, do you feel okay? I don't think I ever knew someone who was pregnant." "Well, you do now. You don't look pregnant." "Just wait," she said. "I will," I blurted weirdly. She smiled. "It actually makes me kind of like nervous and happy," I told her. "Me too. Like, what's going to happen? Like, what happens?" "You won't believe it. Just wait."